Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So Jeff Hurst, the trailer booking and Billy Bones, Paolo Di Canio, West Ham United, more than just a podcast, more than just a podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. This is More Than Just a Podcast. It's season 7 and episode 15, and tonight with me is Nigel. What are you up to? Where are you?
I'm in my office.
Excellent. And just to tell everyone, this is take 2 because in his office, not in his shed, he had a power car, so we had to abandon the first take. So we're going to have to do it all over again. And so I'm going to say for the second time, back by popular demand, is Ian Dale. Good evening, Ian. What are you up to? Where are you?
I am in my sitting room in Pembury near Tunbridge Wells. Raced home to do this and very frustrated that the first one went wrong, but there we go. It happens.
So let's, we've got no John, we've got no George. Fact is sometimes stranger than fiction. They're actually a comedy show tonight. I kid you not.
It's called The West Ham Way.
Getting the jokes in early. Anyway, we've got a football match to discuss before we move on to the elephant in the room, or Slaven Bilic, as we like to call him. What happened on Saturday is well known. Nigel, I know you were there.
I was there.
Tell us about it.
I was there. Poor defensively. Got let down by the players again. He put out the best team for me that he could possibly put out. The first goal, you could blame, well, not blame Fernandes. You can see he dived in early. That's an experience down to age, so it's hard to just blame him for that as such. But from then on, it was downhill, really, wasn't it? And it's a shame that such a good Lanzini goal gets spoilt by the other four at the other end.
Do you blame Slaven with his setup? Was his team selection fit for purpose to face Liverpool from the people he had?
Well, we picked the team that I'd have picked, as I guessed it would be before the game.
Well, actually, so, I've got something to talk to you about that, because Shedman, I mean, releasing the team like 4 hours before kickoff, don't you think that gave Klopp and Liverpool an unfair advantage of knowing what the team was?
Yeah, well, I'm so well known, isn't it? They're obviously all following me. They've obviously clocked what I put out, what my guess of to the team
was.
Well,
it's a lucky guess, was it?
It was a very lucky guess. I don't know how I would have guessed that, but I did. I should have put that on Ian's predictor on his website. I'd have got some points there, I tell you, with that team.
I did.
Oh, Ian, there you go.
That's cheating.
So what was
cheating? Well, I guess
it's a lucky guess.
You had a lucky guess as well, Ian.
Yeah. Why do you think it wasn't lucky? Well, because you told people.
Shocking. The days of secrecy and no leaks in team selection are long gone. Uh-huh. Anyway, back to the game. nice Spitfire outside, a nice mosaic remembrance, and the bugler.
Actually, can I just say, they did that well.
They did do that well, actually.
The club did that well. That looks impressive. From then on, it didn't go to plan. But I thought we started, if you think, are you at the post after 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Difficult shot at an angle, could have done better, maybe. But I thought we had a bright start, and then the goal just... When we go one down at home, you can. It's almost like the life gets sucked out of us. And I think their second goal was lucky, in a way. Their bloke missed it, bounced off Noble's knee. Hart, good save. Tapping. 2-0. We all knew what was going to happen then. 2-0.
Let's talk about the first goal first. I mean, it'll be easy to blame Aaron Cresswell.
Why?
Because he was the lone man back there.
But hold up, he's the man that stayed back. Fernandez dives in.
You think that was just Fernandez being a bit naive? Because
that's youth. And plus, he's not a defender, is he? So no. That's a natural thing for a midfielder to do, what he did there, to go in.
But he was a right back, remember? Shouldn't the other centre back been back with...
Centre
backs?
Your centre backs are in there to score goals. I mean, if Bonner had stayed back against Tottenham, we wouldn't have got the third goal. So considering your centre backs are generally your tallest players, you have them in the box at a corner.
I think it was one of those cases where the stars just aligned for Liverpool. The ball fell perfectly for them. We can blame Fernandes all we like, but actually it was just one of those things that I don't think... You could argue he shouldn't have gone in for it, but it was just one of those things that you just have to put down to experience. So, as Nigel said, for the second goal, I mean, it was nearly an own goal that Hart saved, and it fell to a Liverpool player. Well, what was there really a defensive error there? Probably not. There certainly was for the last two.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you, Neil.
You weren't at the game, were you? Ian, but you were watching on TV.
I watched it at home. I was in Norfolk for the weekend. So normally Liverpool, it's one of those games you'd like definitely want to go to. But something told me that this wasn't going to be our finest hour.
Who had your tickets in?
Should I reveal who had my tickets? Well, I'll just say it's a female Liverpool supporting MP.
Esther McVay?
No.
I was the only one I know.
Yes, again.
So she would have been very happy.
So, yeah, she did actually refrain from texting me after the final whistle, which was very good of her.
I think that's very good. So you had the benefit of replays, which we didn't. You know, we felt quite hard done by the referee. He didn't seem to be giving very much our way. But you had replays to see some of those incidents. Were we hard done by the referee, or was it just pretty shocking?
Well, I think we were, but I've come to a conclusion that I think that referees who referee West Ham at home always give decisions against us. Whereas I went to the Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park, where I was sat in amongst the Crystal Palace ultras, and that several of them actually recognised me, which I was thinking, oh my God, this could be terrible. But they were actually very good. And the referee,
they let you
in that
bang
match,
their drum.
Yeah, the referee in that match seemed to be completely on West Ham's side. Virtually every decision went our way, apart from the penalty, which I thought was a bit soft. But in sort of 50-50 fouls, always went our way. Whereas against Liverpool, it was the other way. There were several occasions, certainly in the first, I remember in the first half an hour, where he deliberately let the game go on when he should have given us a foul. I think that was more in the first half than the second half. But maybe we notice it more when we're at home. I don't know. But I felt that... I don't think there were any match-changing decisions that he got wrong, but he certainly didn't give us the benefit of the doubt in any sort of clashes between two players.
So, Ian, from your armchair, would you blame any of the players for the performance, or was it collectively a bad day in the office?
I think the key moment for me, and you saw this clearly on the TV screen, which you probably wouldn't have done at the ground because you'd have been too far away, Nigel, was when Mark Noble, he'd got the ball around the halfway line, and he wanted to go forward, which, let's face it, is fairly unusual for Mark Noble nowadays. And he couldn't because there was no one to pass to. And he passed the ball back, and I think it went out of play. And he sort of raised his arms and actually said, well, run for the fucking ball. And you could just see that was what he was saying. No one wanted the ball. And that was the case on quite a few occasions. And I think Lanzini played reasonably well. As Nigel said, it's a brilliant goal that he scored. But if you went through the rest of the team, Hernandez was virtually anonymous for the whole game. Obiang, I didn't really think, contributed an awful lot. I don't think Ayew seemed to be all over the place. I think if he'd scored that goal on 10 minutes, I mean, it might have been a very different game. Who knows? Because this team is a team that, if it's confident, they play brilliant football. And there were flashes of that in the first half an hour where they were knocking the ball around quite nicely. But as the game went on and when the first two goals went in, like Nigel said, you saw what was going to happen. And then they flattered and deceived by scoring one. You thought, well, maybe this could turn it round. And as so often this season, they then conceded another goal. And that did knock the stuffing out of them. And then, of course, came the fourth and there was no going back from there.
Yeah, I mean, people started leaving after the third goal. And it started emptying fourth goal. John and George left, I must say. I don't know if they're not here to defend themselves, but they left on the fourth goal.
Yeah, to be fair, they did get out the bar early, though, didn't they, for us?
you actually, I will say, both Nigel, George, and John were pretty slaughtered by just after full time. I met them in Stour Place in the new supporters club, and you lot had pretty much a skinful, hadn't you?
Nigel. I was that bad. Was I?
Well, certainly the other two were. I don't know about you.
Well, yeah.
So you were there. I could spot you way up in the gods.
Only because I'm saying I can see you.
With your flat cap.
Yeah. Keep your head warm.
You stay to the bitter end.
Yes. I generally do stay to the bitter end. So you never know what can happen. Miracles do sometimes happen. Sometimes the opposition score. Well, generally, actually, this season. But, yeah, I'd go to the end, thank the players, give them a clap.
If you stayed a little bit longer, by the way, you could have seen a YouTube crew break it into the ground. As everyone was streaming out, yes. I don't know if you've seen this video, Ian, but yeah, people were breaking in. And this guy from Southampton broke in and jumped on to the roof again.
Well, I watched the first few minutes of it and then stopped because I just thought, what a prick.
Yeah. Yeah, so I spoke to London Stadium today. They're slightly embarrassed about it.
Well, considering, hold up, you've done them down a bit. A security guard clocked them.
Yeah, no, she stopped them.
Escorted them off.
Out.
And this is the funny
thing. She did.
For people that haven't seen it. So he gets escorted off of the island, which is where West Ham security finishes. He then walks to roughly where the Mittal Tower is, goes into a bush, comes out wearing an eye vi. And that's all he's done, put an eye visor.
A high visibility desk.
Walks up and says he's a photographer, makes up some bloke's name, and some dickhead lets him in.
Yeah, he says I'm an apprentice for a photographer to take pictures of the pitch. And they go, come on. Who are you reporting to? Jonathan Hill. All right, okay. I don't know who Jonathan Hill is, but come in. Yeah. Anyway, we digress. It was one of those... it emptied... Andy Carroll spoke about this today, saying people shouldn't... I'm going to ask you, Nigel, and then Ian. Andy Carroll says people shouldn't vote with their feet and walk out of games. Do you agree with him?
It's not something I tend to do. I did on the Swansea game, but then again, I shouldn't have been at the Swansea game from the start. So, and if we were 4-0 up, I'd have been leaving early for the Swansea game. So that's the only time I've done it this season. I personally don't do it. I'll never criticise people for making their own choices. Everybody's got a decision to make. I think a lot of it's allied to the fact that it's a long old schlep back to Stratford. And
it is, yeah. And the DLR wasn't working as well.
And if everybody left at the same time, you know that can be up to an hour for some people. And they just think, 4-1 down. It's bad, you know, with still 20 minutes plus... injury time to go, people were pouring out. It's a sad sight.
I don't usually do it.
Be honest.
I don't usually do it, but I did it at Brighton. Yeah. I will admit, I just had enough. But it was an exception. I say to you in this time, even though I will say again, John and George didn't. Are you an early leaver, Ian?
Not generally. I might leave a couple of minutes before the end because you just want to avoid the crush. But if I'm going back on the train into central London, then I will leave on about 88 minutes. If I'm driving, I stay to the end. But Andy Carroll, I think, has got a bit of a cheek here. Wouldn't it be nice if he stayed on the pitch to the end on a few occasions rather than get sent off or go off injured?
Yeah, you've got a good point there.
No, he's right. To be fair, I think it is a bit of a liberty for Carroll to come out and say that. When players have a pop at fans, you know, they've got short memories.
It never ends well, does it?
Anyway, let's do a quick stat attack before we move on. Obviously, West Ham didn't have the possession, 48% to Liverpool's 52. West Ham had 6 shots, one of them on target, and that was Lanzini that went on. The Reds had 15 shots, 7 on target, 4 of them went in. So it wasn't surprising, the end result.
Hold up there.
Go on.
Let's take a positive out of that.
Go on.
100% record there for shots on target, the goals. I mean, even Liverpool can't claim that.
You are correct in that excellent, because I know how you love your stats.
Hold up. And was it not the fact that we had 2 shots on target against Palace the week before?
Do I hear the sound of straws being clutched?
So therefore, in our last 2 league games, we've got 100% conversion rate, shots on target. Excellent. That's impressive.
Yeah,
impressive. And we've still sacked him.
I was about to go to the last gaffer, but I'm asked one question that's just come up, and I was going to ask earlier. What's going on with Hernandez? Is little P just not performing? Is he not getting the right balls in? You know, he's supposed to be a fox in the box, and some balls have come in with him. He just doesn't seem to be as sharp.
Well, hang on a minute, because the goal he scored at Palace was absolute quality, and that was a world-class goal. Yep. And he has scored 4 goals. How many games have we played this season so far? Is it 11, 12?
11 in the league.
That's not a bad return rate. Bear in mind that we haven't actually played to his strengths, and I always think if you're going to play a particular striker, you do have to make the formation revolve around them. We don't always do it when Andy Carroll's playing. We certainly haven't done it for him. And I don't think we can, although he has been his performance in that game was disappointing, and it has been in 1 or 2 games. But the best thing that the new manager could do, which I know we're going to come on to, is say to him, right, you are the key to this team. You are the one that's going to get the goals. And actually consult him on what he wants from the formation, because I'm not sure anybody's actually asked him yet. And I'm not sure that Bilic ever knew how to play him properly.
Well, hold that thought. We're going to talk more of that later.
Can I just say he's more like a mushy pig than a little pig.
Great.
It don't look right, and it just ain't working.
By the way,
probably was better off up.
There's a 2015 story how he said he didn't get on with Moyes before. I don't know quite. I haven't read the story yet, but let's hope that that's not the case. Anyway, not prejudging stuff. For the very last time, let's hear the sure. Let's hear what the gaffer had to say.
Slaven, you wanted a reaction from your players. Did you see it in the first half? We saw something in the second half.
Yeah. To be fair, we started well. First 20 minutes, we had a chance. They had a ball possession, but we were all in a good shape behind the ball. Exactly what we wanted. We were really well covering the space behind us. That they are good with the pace of Mane, with the pace of Salah and them. But then we conceded 2 goals. A very cheap or great counter-attack from them, and the second one from the set piece. And then we tried to come back in the second half. We changed the shape. We were more open. We were taking the risk and came back with a goal, but then conceded straight away. And then after that, we tried, but it's difficult. We knew they had that kind of a pace on counter-attacks and strength, but big defeat for us. Yeah.
So how do you explain those defensive lapses? Is it lack of concentration, quality? What is it, effort?
It's not the effort. You know, we can't talk about lack of effort today. It's like the first goal is counter-attack. The ball dropped for them brilliantly. our one player who was there in front of the box didn't react really well, and then when they're in a good shape with Mane, with Salah and them, it's hard to defend that counter-attack. But we should have there's no excuse to concede a goal from your corner kick, to be fair. Then straight away the second one came, which we can call lapse of concentration or unluckiness, but it is on this level, when you concede a couple of goals that early against such a strong side, it's not game over, because still there's a lot of to play, but it's very difficult to come back.
So what happens now? Are you determined to carry on? I know you believe in yourself.
Yeah, I have to talk to the chairman and all that. And of course, we're going to discuss this defeat, because it's not the first one. It is the second in a row at home, and it's a very difficult situation, if you are talking for me, of course. But the club is above everything and everyone, and that's all I can say now, you know.
Do you believe in yourself still?
I always believe in myself, you know. I wouldn't be here otherwise, you know. I do.
And do you think they're backing you in the same way?
Look, it's hard for me to talk about that now, you know. I can't understand everything.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
What do you think about that then, Nigel?
The way he defended his players there sums it up for me. The way he took the blame. Himself.
He was a broken man, wasn't he? And you just knew what was going to happen next. And it probably came as no surprise. Well, it didn't to me. I went on TalkSport at 5:45 this morning to talk about it. I know, I was. I woke up at 5:43, by the way. I set my alarm.
Who do you think listens to TalkSport at 5:45 in the morning?
The night shift going on.
No, they're all listening to Steve Allen on LBC.
Well, that's who I was listening to, fun enough. I only listened to it because Sean texted it to me.
Believe it or not, I had some people who did listen to it that were sad enough to be up at that time. But we knew it was going to happen. It was Karen Brady who delivered the last hatchet. She went to Rush Green. The players had a day off. They weren't there today. I'm told it was a very respectful and it was very honourable and very professional. But ultimately, obviously, we all know he got the sack. He gets, and obviously the backroom boys go, they get about £3 million between them, which not a bad day's work, is it, to fail and get that much money.
I'm just thinking, how funny would it have been, right, if Karen sits there and right at the last minute she gets Alan Sugar to walk in and go, you're fired. Now that would have been funny, wouldn't it? Come on. Alan Sugar's hiding behind the door, Slaven's getting the old speech, and then she goes...
Only if it was caught on camera.
Isn't it? Hey?
Right. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't watch the programme anyway, so I wouldn't know what you're talking about,
oh,
Nigel.
You know what I'm talking about. I don't watch it because she's on it, to be fair. I used to watch it before she turned up.
Anyway, let's start with you, Nigel, because I know you've got views on this. Did they make the right decision in sacking him? Should they have given him more time? Did they go around letting him go in the right way? This is your soapbox.
I can argue for and against. So, personally, I would have given him till the Leicester job. I think we're playing a lot better away from home than we are at home. And I'm not going to actually blame the stadium, but there's obviously something of why we're playing better away from home. We're unbeaten since August away from home. I'll caveat that. We've not won either. we've drawn three games. But personally, I'd have given him till the Leicester game to see what happens against Watford and then Leicester, because if we took 4 or 6 points out of those two games, we can stabilise it. Now, personally now, I think he was set up for a fall. It was put out by people like you and all the others. He had two games to save his job. Tottenham, Palace. Beats Tottenham, draws with Palace. The players let him down against Palace. Then what? So basically, they were waiting for the defeat that we have every season. There's always a team that turns up, or more than one team that turns up and smashes us. It's almost as if, oh, we'll keep putting it off till we have a bad defeat, then we'll sack him. So in that case, for me, spineless from the board. Absolutely spineless.
I don't think if I ever sit two games, by the way.
Oh, listen.
And I don't think other people, that was a media story. I can tell you, the sources, my sources tell, never, there was never, it was a number of games. In fact, I was told the opposite.
All right, let's go then, it weren't. So, off of the back of this one defeat then, yeah, he gets sacked. Is that what you're saying then?
I think they thought he ran out of ideas and he lost the dressing room. I got told by a number of senior people that they wanted him to turn it around and get to the summer, and that's really what they wanted to do. I think the decision to sack him was made very recently.
I think that we had this discussion earlier. Now I'll go. I think he got sacked because of there was such a storm now of toxicity surrounding him on social media, drummed up by a lot of people.
Go on, name them.
Throughout. No, I ain't going to name them because have them beaten down the door. Oh, you said this, you said that. You're all collective responsible, in my opinion, for putting out. You can put out pro stuff and you can put out negative stuff, and it whips the people up. It turns people against Bilic. I'm telling you, if the fans weren't against Bilic, he wouldn't have been sacked. The fans turned against Bilic. Now, the problem you get is you can't sack the players, you can't sack the fans, you can't sack the chairman. Yeah, because they're not going to sell up and go. The only way to stop the toxic atmosphere is to make a change. Therefore, the only change left available is the manager. So therefore, now this is where I argue against myself. Therefore, Bilic in a way had to go because you couldn't allow this toxic atmosphere to carry on.
Yeah, and that's the problem, because if you want to get rid of a toxic atmosphere, there are certain people that you don't appoint, which I know you're going to come on to in a minute. But
we will. I'm going to come to you about Bilic though, Ian. I mean, I was accused actually on your own website, West Ham Till I Die, on my column, and I'm sure you read it. I was almost hounded off there twice in my two views about Slaven Bilic.
I don't think you've written for it since, have you?
I haven't. I can probably come back now, Ian, because
if you would.
Your readers sort of hounded me off twice from the last two columns I wrote, but you know, I don't take it personally. I've got very thick skin. You have to be
such a snowflake.
So where do you stand with the whole Bilic thing? Was the position untenable? Do you agree with Nigel that he was hounded out by fan power?
Well, that's probably got a little to do with it. It normally does when a manager loses a job. It's very rare that a club will sack a manager that is really popular with the fans. Now, Bilic has been popular. He was popular as a player until he left, and he's been popular as a manager. And if you look at some of the polls that various websites have conducted over the past 48 hours, would you rather have Bilic continue or have David Moyes? I think most of them have come out in Bilic's favour. So I think we all agree. We all like Slaven Bilic. We all respect him. But I think he had, at least in part, lost the dressing room. I think many of his tactical decisions have proved to be bizarre, to say the least. Some of his substitutions have been a little bit odd. Now, you can blame all sorts of things, but in the end, the buck does stop with the manager. And you look at some of these statistics that have been thrown around over the last few days, particularly on player fitness. We're bottom of the league in terms of miles run per game, I understand. That probably says something. If you're not giving your all for your manager, you're probably not running as much as you ought to. Now, you don't win a football match just by running, clearly. But I think that there are problems on the fitness side. Why is it that we've conceded so many goals in the last 5 or 10 minutes? That has to be partly due to concentration and fitness. Not all to do with it, but that will play a part. So I didn't want Bilic to go. I've never been I certainly wanted Allardyce to go when he went, but I've never been one of the people who just wanted Bilic out come what may. I think he probably ought to have gone in the last international break, and I think it is right that he's gone now. However, given the choice of Bilic or Moyes, I know which one I would want to play for.
Okay, hold that thought. I mean, just to add to the conversation, it will come no surprise that I've been on the, you know, I thought Billich should have gone in the summer. I blame the board for not acting in the summer. We knew there were problems at the training ground. I thought they should have changed the backroom team. I understand they did consider it, but they bottled out because they thought that maybe Billich would walk. You know, you've got a 69-year-old handball coach in charge of fitness. You've got Julian Dix. No one really knows what he does. You've got the rest of the team. We hear that people turned up late. People were strolled in. People had extra time off. And there were rumours of holiday camp. Heard that when academy players went off to the first team, they came back slightly more unfit. There must be some smoke. You know, there's no smoke without fire. The substitutions, the tactics, playing people out of position, it just wasn't consistent enough to me. And I said this, I've said this consistently. It's why I was beaten up by On West Ham Till I Die of my views. I was accused of being a club stooge, and I'm just sending the agenda of the board. But I think they actually, opposite, I think they stuck by him too long. I thought they should have sacked him a lot earlier in the summer.
Hold up.
Go on.
Hold up. We've just sacked a man that in his first season took us to our second best ever finish in the Premier League.
Yeah, he got lucky.
The most amount of points and the first ever positive goal difference in the Premier League. Yeah.
One season.
Not only that, in his second season, he took us to 11th, which is a position that is possibly roughly where West Ham would be expected to finish. How, in those two seasons, the two full seasons he has, from the board's perspective, he's achieved a near correct finish, yeah? So the money that would have brought in, the money he brought in by finishing 7th, qualifying for Europe again, how is that conducive to failure? So actually, business club-wise, he was a success, or he achieved what he was set out to achieve. Allardyce was never sacked because he kept achieving the tasks he was achieving. Yet Billich has been sacked.
But look at the investment that was made into him. Let's look at the transfer market.
No, forget about that. And I'll tell you why. Because, you know, people can bang on about Arnautovic being £24 million. Yeah. He's a player.
Zaza.
He had to be paid.
Yeah, but Caleri.
Transfers are inflated because of the TV
it's
money.
It's not grass. I could go on.
All Billich signings?
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course you'll say that, because this is what the club now want you to
say. No.
Caleri was not a Billich signing.
Right, so Caleri might be the exception in there.
Just that one.
But no, Zaza was a Billich signing. Gökhan Tor.
Right, hold up. Let's look at Zaza now. Was Zaza a good player? Well, yeah. He must be. He's doing well in Spain.
Yeah.
Just he didn't fit into British football. It was a gamble. Didn't pay off. Sacco was a gamble. Paid off. Gökhan Tor, yes.
Can't answer that one. When you buy any
foreign player, they're all gambles.
Snodgrass.
They're all gambles. Well, he's Scottish. He's foreign.
Yeah, but, you know, he's doing well. He's doing well for Villa now. And he seems to be motivated. But you heard what he said. He said he didn't even know where I played. He said, where do you want me to play?
I'm sorry. Listen, he says that after he leaves the club because he's been shown the door after 6 months. He's embarrassed. Of course he's going to have a dig.
Anyway, it's water under the bridge. Slav has gone. He was a nice bloke. Well done, Slav. We want to thank you for all the, you know, for me, right, I want to thank you for that night in Wembley just last week. Myself and Nigel get covered in beer or whatever it was for that 3-2 win over Spurs. Thanks, Slav, and good luck for the future. But we have to move on.
And just on that, though, I'd like to thank him for the 3-2 victory over Manchester United, the last game at Upton Park, because that meant just as much to him as it meant to us. And the statement that the club allowed him to put on the website today says a lot about the man. He is a proud man.
He is.
And I don't think there are any West Ham fans that harbour any ill will towards him at all.
No.
He does live it in a sense like we do. I mean, clearly it's that it's not quite the same as we do, but he did care, and that's what you want from a manager. With Allardyce, you never really got the impression that he gave a flying whatever.
Yeah,
There's one bit. Let me just say this, yeah, because there's one bit in his farewell stuff on the put together by the club, obviously, on the website, where he put he hoped to continue to close the gap between expectation levels and reality. And for me, that hits a nail on the head. There's the expectation levels of the club brought on by the owners' statements throughout the years of their ownership. And then there's reality of West Ham. And the reason why I've always been perceived as being negative is because I live in reality. I know what West Ham are. And it don't bother me that they're that type of club.
How boring to live in reality.
I know. It's shocking, isn't it? That's what 40 years of watching them does.
You need to be a dreamer.
Exactly. You've got to have dreams. Why should we always have to accept mediocrity?
It's not about accepting mediocrity. I can't even say the bloody word. That's what a Canningtown education does for you. I can't even speak it, let alone spell it. But basically, it's not about accepting that word. It's about understanding that West Ham is the type of club where we didn't go to... I wasn't brought up to believe that we were going to win the championship, that we were the best team in the country. I was brought up that we would play good, decent football. We'd win, we'd lose. We'd beat good teams, lose to crap teams. We'd beat crap teams, then lose to good teams. That's the way it's always
been. But we were also brought up to believe that every so often we would win something. And the last time we won something, I was 18. And I'm 55 now.
Hold up, Ian. Yeah, but Ian, we've only ever... And this is the thing, you say that, yeah? That's because we've come along in the 16-year period that West Ham ever won trophies. 16 years out of 117. A 16-year period that West Ham won every trophy it ever won.
It's about time we started again.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Yeah. Right, now I don't disagree, yeah, but there's a way of doing it, and the way the club have gone about it is the wrong way.
All right, well, we'll talk about that. We will talk about that in a minute with talking about David Moyes. But, you know, what I heard is the board wanted to wait to the summer. You know, they had targets such as whether Rafa Benitez would leave at Liverpool, whether they could persuade Mancini, Pellegrini, and I'm trying to think of some other ones. Conte,
I mean, what do we want any of those?
Mourinho. Who?
If you read any books by Ancelotti. Former Liverpool players
Ancelotti.
About Benitez, and you would not want him to manage West Ham United. Do we want Pellegrini? I'm not sure we do. Why on earth can't we find good young British managers who we can give a chance to? They don't have to have been sort of managing a top Premier League side. Surely we have people who can identify good up-and-coming managers. There are plenty out there if we look hard enough. Well, he's one. Eddie Howe's another. But there Sean are plenty Dice. In the lower leagues who I actually think could... I mean, the guy... I'm going to argue against myself now because I can't remember the guy's name. But the one... And I know it's like sort of from the sublime to the ridiculous here. But the guy who manages Lincoln City, who brought them up from the non-league, had that marvellous cup run last season. I mean, should we not be looking at sort of young managers who could be given an opportunity, or do we always have to go for essentially people who failed in the past? Because that's what we've done. You look at Avram Grant, you look at Sam Allardyce, you look at David Moyes, you look at Slaven Bilic to a certain extent. None of them have actually succeeded in the way that you would traditionally define success.
But then Ron Greenwood never succeeded at anything before we joined West Ham. Well, he hadn't actually managed a football club final. Ron Greenwood.
Well, fair enough. But I'm not saying we should pick people who've got no experience at all. But nobody's telling me that in the Championship or even in League One, my microphone's just fallen over. There aren't people who are capable of doing a job at a high level. It's like young players. Why is it that we feel we have to go and buy all these foreign players now when there are very good young players in the lower leagues, but we don't seem to look at them anymore, or very rarely? And if we do sign them, like Sam Byram, they get treated like a piece of meat. They never get a run in the side to prove what they can do. They just get the odd game here and there. And then if they make the odd mistake like Declan Rice did, they're out.
Right, there is an explanation for that, Ian. And the explanation is that the owners in moving this club, I'm not saying just to the stadium, but from 2010 onwards, they spouted a word that I always said from the day they spouted it would be a noose around their neck, and it was called next level. Because young up-and-coming English managers are not next-level managers, yeah? Young footballers are not next-level footballers. Next-level footballers, if you want to get the next level, Man City, the first thing they did when they got bought was buy Robinho. He was a next-level player.
They had to start somewhere.
Well, I don't know if Pyatt was a next level player, actually. He was a virtual unknown.
Well, he proved to be. Whether they intended him to be is another matter.
Well, yeah. See, what I'm saying is, Man City then went out, they straight away, and then they brought other people. Robinho was just a start. Mm-hmm. He weren't actually there when they won the title, was he? But it showed what they wanted. That took Man City to the next level. You tell me where they're going to do that, the owners. And this is what boils down to. Everything you said is not a next level West Ham. If they'd never said that, I don't think after the reaction would be happening.
I know you won't agree with this.
They've made a rod for their own back, and I hope it chokes.
I know you won't agree with this, but we do have a next level stadium. It's not.
It is because in
all aspects, that stadium is a next level stadium compared to Upton Park.
The only next level is where Arse sit, and fair enough.
In terms of in the long term attracting better players, that stadium in itself ought to attract
footballers do not play. Do not join a club. Think. Do you know what? I think the stadium's good. Our stadium's going to be an embarrassment.
I tell you what, having been to Selhurst Park for the first time in 15 years, I sat there thinking,
"You're outnumbered.
My God, we've got a fantastic stadium compared to this." And if you,
isn't that funny? Because if you'd have sat in with the away fans, then you might have heard fans going, "Do you know what? It's a bit of a shithole, but I actually prefer it here."
Well,
because it's a proper old football stadium.
It may be, but if you're a footballer who's on 50 grand a week and you get the choice of going to somewhere like West Ham with a great stadium and Crystal Palace with a horrible stadium, I know which one I'd pick.
Yeah, but they would pick West Ham because West Ham's a bigger club than Crystal Palace, Ian. Not because West Ham playing a 54, 57 or 66,000 seater stadium. Well, I'm sorry.
We're going to move on. Before we carry on the London stage, we're going to move on because we've got a lot to cover. I'm going to throw one thing in before I do the next thing in the running order. Good friend of the podcast, Leon Hyde, who was the DJ at West Ham, came up with an idea. He said, why not appoint Kevin Nolan, who's done really good things at Notts County, with Rio Ferdinand, Frank Lampard and Scott Parker as his backroom team? Do you think that would work? No.
I think he's playing dream team.
You don't think Kevin Nolan, you talked about getting people from the league.
To be fair, I think Kevin Nolan is actually going about it the right way. He's doing very well at Notts County. He actually did well at Orient before that lunatic sacked him, the Italian. He's gone to Notts County, done well there. Actually, perhaps in a year and a half or 2 years' time, when whoever the next manager is leaves, hopefully, perhaps Kevin Nolan has proved himself again higher up, either with Notts County in the next league, to be given the chance. I would not be sad at the moment to see Kevin Nolan come back to this club.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I'm just going to talk to you. Clarence Hugh poll, famous Clarence Hugh poll, 3,715 just before I went.
What, polls?
Polls. vote for your...
How many polls you've run, innit? 3,715.
Who would you like as your next manager? The fans decide. Gus Hiddink got 25% of the vote. Ronald Koeman got 19%. Terry Westley got a surprising 12%. Alan Pardew got 10%. Red Knapp got 8%. Allardyce got 7%. Billidge only got 6%. And Moyes only got 2%. We did it from only available managers. I think 10% was the rest if they were available. Where would you pick in that group, Nigel?
Well, now he's been sacked, I'll talk about it. Me, I would. I think you missed someone. Don't laugh. And that is Frank de Boer.
Okay.
Frank de Boer went to the wrong football club and followed the wrong manager. He was left with long ball players at a club that did not play football to the football that he played at Ajax. De Boer can only blame himself for going to Crystal Palace in the first place. I think with a club like West Ham, with the players we got, we'd see them a lot better outcome.
Ian, same question to you.
Well, it would be a brave board that took De Boer on, I think, after Crystal Palace. Yeah. But I would take the point. Of that list, well, I wouldn't have picked Allardyce. I think an approach was made to Allardyce, but I'm told that he wanted £8 million to come back to West Ham.
Wow.
So if an approach was made...
Wouldn't you love to win Sam Allardyce just when that phone call... Oh,
well, I presume it was done through intermediaries, but I mean... Anyway, of that list, I would probably go for Koeman because I think Koeman is a good manager. He was excellent at Southampton. He was excellent in the first year at Everton.
He was excellent at Ajax.
Yeah, I think he's a hard taskmaster, and I think that's partly what we need now. I would have picked Pardew over Moyes, I have to say. Pardew, you obviously have to give the supply a few chastity belts around the place, but...
allegedly.
But I really liked Pardew as manager, but he is one of these managers that is brilliant for a few months and then is awful for a few months. These teams are never consistent throughout a season. If you had a sort of like a second half of the season plus the first half of the next season, he would win a league, but he's just not consistent enough. But I loved watching him on the touchline because he really did sort of, he was very emotional. I think the crowd really took to him. People don't remember that now, but they did. So as a temporary measure, I would have probably gone for him over Moyes. I emailed David Sullivan last night and said, please, please don't do this. To no avail.
No.
Well, you don't know.
Well, let me, just before we move on, I mean, I understand Redknapp and Gus Hiddink, I think, are considered too old, whether they would actually want to take it on or whether we would want to...
Sullivan hates Redknapp.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to go that I wasn't going to go that harsh, Ian, but I won't actually say what they that someone has said to me. Gus Hiddink, they didn't think he would actually take on the job at his age. Not sure he's up for the challenge. Koeman didn't get very good reports from the dressing room. Apparently he lost the players and wasn't very well liked in the dressing room. Terry Westley, I think, had a little go at Derby, but I don't think he's got the skill set to take over West Ham, even though he got a lot of the vote. Pardew, I think he's failed a number of times and they wouldn't want him back at the club. Allardyce, as we know, would want a king's ransom, as you've already said. Bilic has been sacked. So it leaves a nice link. The Moyes was the only person left, really, even though he only got 2% of the vote.
Quick Koeman stat. Yeah, every season in the Premier League, he finished above West Ham.
Is it?
Yeah.
So,
he's only had four, hasn't he?
I mean, but there's only about four managers actually that can say that. I think four or five managers.
Would you say? Koeman is supposed to be a disciplinarian, but apparently he just lost the dressing room completely in the end of Everton.
Well, you've just said we've had an holiday camp, yeah. And the players, and Bilic has lost the players. So now you get Koeman, who's a disciplinarian. Oh, what? And he loses the dressing room. So that,
I think you need to have a balance.
That says all we need to know about professional football.
Well, you need a balance. Anyway, that's we want to move on. Obviously, we all know the next manager is going to be David Moyes. Let's not beat around the bush, right? We know it's been leaked. I think he may take over as soon as Tuesday. We're recording this on Monday. I think it will be announced tomorrow. And I think he will take training tomorrow.
We're going to look absolute dicks if he doesn't get appointed, aren't we?
He will be. I mean, he hasn't signed. Let's be clear.
Sean does.
He hasn't signed on the dotted line. He has not signed his contract. But, you know, a deal's in place. I understand that he's been offered £2 million for 6 months, including his backroom staff, which he's yet to pick. Yes, like any transfer or anything else, he's got to sign his contract. And he hasn't signed his contract yet, so you're right. Until he signs his contract, he's not our manager. But barring all that, I believe he will be signing. He wants to prove himself. So, we're talking about... I wrote a blog this morning saying the case for David Moyes. But before I make my case, I'm going to hear from the defence, from Ian Dale. Because I know you as you said, wrote to Ian Dale. wrote to David Sullivan, asking him not to employ David Moyes. What is your problem with David Moyes?
Failure, really. He failed. He did a good job at Everton. There's no doubt about it. On a very limited budget, he did put together a team that probably overperformed year on year. He was recommended to Manchester United by Alex Ferguson. Well, you don't get a much better recommendation than that. And that was always going to be a difficult job. But he clearly failed in that job. He then went to Spain, utterly failed in that job, and then went to Sunderland, and again, utterly failed in that job. Now, you can make all sorts of excuses for why he failed in those three different jobs. And I hope that I'm going to be proved absolutely wrong on this. But I don't like the style of football that he generally plays. It's not a particularly attractive style. And I know we have all this stuff about the West Ham way and all the rest of it, but he's probably not quite on the Allardyce scale in terms of ugly football, but he's not far off. He will be much more of a disciplinarian. He will probably get the team a lot fitter. And with the individual players that we've got, if he gets us relegated with this team, then I mean we might as well all give up, because we should not be relegated with these players. We know we were. What was it, 2001, 2002, with all those fantastic players we have. So we know it can happen. I don't believe even David Moyes can get us relegated with these players, but he's not somebody who fills me with any inspiration. I didn't like that interview he did on Sunday with Richard Keys, where he was almost like a vulture picking over Bilic's corpse. I thought that was a pretty disgusting thing to have done. I don't think I can ever remember seeing a manager do that before. Okay, you can say, well, the die was cast at that point, so why shouldn't he say he was interested in the job? But that didn't sit well with me. But I wish him well. He is going to be our new manager, so I absolutely wish him well, and I hope I'm proved wrong on every single thing I've just said.
Right. I'm going to put my case for David Moyes, and then we'll let Nigel come in. I think he was unlucky. I was listening to something on TalkSport earlier and said, you know, Sunderland was a basket case. He should never have taken the job. He wasn't given any money, and it was a bad judgment for him to take that, because it scarred him, as Tony Gale said on Sky today, and it tarnished his reputation. You know, he was Sir Alex Ferguson's successor. He named him as his successor, one of the greatest managers ever. You know, he didn't do that to commit him to failure. It was always going to be a tough job to follow at Man United. But that said, if you look at how many their win records, you know, he had a 48% win rate at Preston North End, followed by 42 at Everton and 50, nearly 53 at Manchester United. It wasn't enough to keep him at Manchester United, but by any standards and West Ham standards, it's good. And what we really care about is points per game. So West Ham managers, well, Slaven Bilic averaged 1.31 compared with Alan Kerbishley, I think got 1.32. No, it was Slaven Bilic got 1.33 actually. Alan Kerbshire got 1.32 and Harry Redknapp 1.31. He got much better than that. He got 1.73 at Old Trafford and 1.52 at...
How can you compare that with West Ham? Look at the players he has at his disposal.
Well, when he was at Everton... All right, Man United, yes, but when he was at Everton, he always did things with small budgets. You know, he picked up... He didn't have the best players when, at the 10 years or 11 years he was at Everton, you can't say he had the best players, and yet he still got a good average. And I think he's a very disciplined manager. And the other thing I'm going to say is he won League Manager Association Manager of the Year 3 times. The only one to beat him again, Sir Alex Ferguson, who got it 4 times. So you've got to look back.
Have you always been a fan of David Moyes, Sean?
Well, I haven't always been a fan of David Moyes. But I have seen the light. I've done some research, right? I've done some research.
Like a puppet on a string.
Hang on a minute. He got Everton into the Champions League. He got them into an FA Cup final. Let's be positive, right? Let's get behind the manager and say... Let's have the Everton David Moyes, you know, that found Wayne Rooney and gave him a chance, and that found Ross
Burke. But the Everton David Moyes was, what, 5, 6, 7 years ago?
Like Tony Gale said earlier, who's one who said, you know, you remember he was at Everton for 11 years, 4,082 days at Everton. He built up that experience. You don't just lose it. You don't become a bad manager overnight. He's still got that experience, and that's why they've recruited him. And I hope, and I'm sure we all want to get behind him, and hope that he wants to prove everybody wrong, to show that you know, his time in Spain and his time with Sunderland were just a blip on his career, and he proves everybody wrong, and that he's a really good manager.
How much transfer budget do you think he's been given for January?
He has been he will be given, because he's not been appointed yet. He will be given. We did keep quite a lot of it back because we didn't spend on it. I think he will be given quite a lot, but he will also be given the money to reinvest. So if we want to get rid of an AU and Andy Carroll, etc., I think he will be given 100% to reinvest of that money. And I will think, although
that's
you won't get real value in January, we all know that. He will be given.
They're not going to let him spend much in January. If he's only there till the end of the season, they're not going to push the boat out in January.
Well, I'm sure. You know, look, there's one thing that everybody else has missed. Do you know who is in charge of recruitment at West Ham?
Tony Henry.
Who is Tony Henry?
He's Dave Sullivan's chief scout, and he's also worked at Everton for 6 or 7 years with David Moyes.
Exactly. Exactly. They work together. They work really well together. And I think my understanding it's Tony Henry that really recommended David Moyes and has sung his praises.
Well, it certainly wasn't Hernandez, was it?
Well, we'll wait and see on that. Nigel, let's bring you in as the neutral on this. You've heard the case for the defence and prosecution. Where do you sit with David Moyes?
I'll just point out that all previous comments were brought to you in association with West Ham United Holdings and West Ham United Football Club.
What are you saying, Nigel?
Did your microphone fall over again there, Nigel?
Yes. Yeah. Do you know what propaganda is, Sean?
No.
It's what Cockneys do when we have a good look about.
Are you suggesting that I'm pro... David Moyes just for comedy value or entertainment value for this podcast?
No, I actually somehow think some do believe it as well, strangely enough. I'll paint a picture. David Moyes would be acceptable as West Ham manager if we just hired him from Everton and we were still at the bowling and we were just trundling along. The reason, and therefore he would have been a good West Ham appointment. So if he'd come in after Pardew, or if he'd come in after Kerbishley, because let's face it, Kerbishley and Moyes probably play the same style of football. Kerbishley's more palatable because he was born in West Ham and grew up a West Ham kid and played for us. So Moyes don't have that attachment. Now, his record at Everton, bearing in mind West Ham and Everton, in my book, a similar size club, you can say was outstanding. they had lean years, but then they had, I think, 5 of the last 7 years he qualified for Europe, including once the Champions League, even though they got knocked out in the first stage of the qualifying. But anyway, they still finished 4th, they still got there. I think he finished 4th twice. I think did he not finish 4th and then Liverpool won the Champions League as well, and took their qualifying spot, I don't know. But he did get them in the top 4. He qualified for Europe. So therefore, he's quite a good fit for Old West Ham. Yep. Old West Ham was killed in 2016. We're now onto London United with the promises of everything. Well, no, this is the thing. Here we go again, because even I'm bored of saying it. But what you fail to realise is the fan backlash about David Moyes is all down to the propaganda the club put out in the 7 years that they're 7.5 years, approaching 8 years they've been there, about all this, don't worry, we're going to change this club. In 2010, they said 7 years' time, we'll have Champions League football. I mean, there's not a bit, you know, perhaps in 8 years, we may have championship football if it don't work out. But and it all boils down to the spin and the lot, and I don't want to say lies, the economical with the truths that they put out in the period leading up to this. Now they've got here, it's time to put up. The problem is, which I've said from day one, it bores me saying it now, is I always said they can't put up because they haven't got the ability to do it. And this leads us now to where we replace Slaven Bilic with David Moyes. And that's so, why he's not acceptable. Is he acceptable to me? Yes, he is acceptable to me. Because, again, I live in reality. And I didn't believe a word those people said.
Okay, all right. Fair enough. You get the final word for once. Now we're going to go for this. So earlier today, I said Sheb Man, a.k.a. Nigel Khan, Ian Dale and Sean will be podcasting tonight after the Liverpool defeat, discussing the sacking of Slaven Bilic and the appointment of the next manager, David Moyes. Gary Prince says, how happy is Sean now? He got the stadium he loves. Bilic is now out and the board is still in place. Everything is wanted. How happy is he? Well, I'm pretty happy, although... You know, I'm apprehensive, like everybody else, on David Moyes. You know, he's got to prove himself. And what we can't do, and I think we all agree, is get relegated. I worry that there's some fans who would love us to see us relegated now. I think you're one of them, Nigel.
Do you know what? I tell you, that is not true. I would not love to see West Ham relegated. But as I've always said, it's an occupational hazard for West Ham. And I don't fear relegation. It don't bother me, to be fair, because I still go over there. So whether we're playing Man United or Mansfield, I'll still be there. So that don't bother me. But I'll stop.
Just let you know, Arbeloa has just tweeted. Have you seen it? About time, isn't it? Or something he said to the news. They didn't get on. They had one hell of a big bust up. That's another story. Ed Hughes says, sick of Hammers fans. Bilic has been awful for 18 months, despite being a thoroughly nice bloke. For the past 6 weeks, a vast majority of fans wanted him out. Today, the ball got rid, and the fans are screaming out, get rid of Moyes. We have to support him or we'll go down. Moyes is no fool. At Preston and North End and Everton, he did well. At Man United, when you compare him to Van Gaal, he didn't do too bad. Let's face it. He asked for Ronaldo and Bale and was given Fellaini. I worked in Saint Sebastian when he was at Sociedad Boss, and the fans generally liked him because he introduced stability and a few youngsters got blooded in. At Sunderland he was doomed to fail, and the club are in free fall before he arrived with an ancient team. It's a place where careers go and die. Fundamentally, we must give him a chance. Anything else is disgusting behaviour, no matter what you think of the board. Has he got a point?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You think fans are too quick to...
Listen, I ain't going to name names or start spats again, But people out there have been shouting, Billy chat. And then when Moyes turns up, we're all going, well, Moyes, you know, well, this not what we want, blah, blah, blah. We, no, you got what you want. You got Billy Chow. This is, you know, be careful what you wish for territory.
Yeah. Well, Nick Carvey says, I'm all out of rants. Yes, Billy Chat to go, but that should have been at the end of last season. Moyes is just about the worst possible choice and just shows what a mess Sullivan and his co-conspirators have got us in by not acting in the summer. I can only see it getting worse before it gets better. Hashtag Moyes out. By the way, I was contacted by Odds Changer, Odds Checker rather, website, and they sent me a press release today saying 83% of all bets placed today were on West Ham to be relegated at 9-4. Do you think we get relegated, Ian?
Well, there's a lot of Millwall fans doing that, aren't there? No, I don't think we'll get relegated. I really don't, because... and I do fear what would happen to us if we were relegated. But I just cannot bring myself to contemplate it. But then again, we've been in this situation before where we thought it wouldn't happen, and it has. But we haven't got Avram Grant in charge this time, or Glenn Roeder.
True. Tim Sharman says, the board have let fans down over and over again. How can the loyal fans, not selfie-taking, popcorn-eating day-trippers, let the board know how we feel about their lies? Moving to take us to the next level, attracting big-name players, Champions League, etc., etc. What is this? Nigel, I know you're not a spokesman for all balled-out people, but what is it that people continually blame the board for everything, including, I heard earlier, blaming them about the scaffolding under the seats, saying they promised retractable seating and it was a lie, it never came. One, it wasn't in their gift, and two, who cares what seat you sit on?
It's a stick that they can be beaten with.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that you can argue about retractable seating. It's actually in the correct position it should be, whether it moved backwards and forwards. And whether it moves backwards or forwards or not is not a West Ham's problem. But when Karen Brady was putting out all her promo videos, propaganda, you know, she made claims. World-class teams, world-class players in a world-class stadium. That's an actual quote from her. As you know, I've
clicked it. Yeah, it's marketing.
No, listen. You market at customers, not at fans. We're not customers. We're fans. When people say to me, why do you still go there? I go, because this ain't Sainsbury's, this ain't Tesco's, where I go down to Lidl's or Aldi's. This is West Ham and I'm bloody stuck with them. This is the thing. The reason why they're beaten like that is because they came up with that crap to fool the people into thinking that it was going to change. The one thing I've always said is the worst thing that could happen to West Ham in that stadium is we stay as West Ham United, just in a different ground. But that's what's happened. In a way, it's good for me, because I sit there and go, well, actually, this is the West Ham I know and love. It's a circus. So actually, the sadomasochist in me quite enjoys it, because I think, well, actually,
I know you do.
We're still...
Well, I was right.
So that's what he's got in his shed.
But, yeah, exactly.
But the fact is, they promised something, and it's turned into dust. The problem is, people haven't waited long enough to see if it will come true or not.
Okay, anyway, we must move on. Dan Brazil says, Moyes out. I will always support the players right up until the end, but now the manager, including Bilic. I cannot muster anything the spent force that is David Moyes. What a shit time for our club. I hope I'm wrong, he says at the end. Yeah, we all hope you're wrong on that. Egg Fawthorn says, I keep on telling myself it can't get worse. Then I look where Sunderland are in the Championship table. And here's hoping the board knows something we all don't. Nevertheless, I will back the manager. Come on, you Irons. Do you think that... I know 2% only wanted him. Do you think when he is appointed that in the end fans will get behind him, Ian?
Well, we're a fickle lot, aren't we? If he wins the first three games, everyone... I mean, you'll be doing a podcast in a month's time where... everyone's saying, oh, I never thought he could do that. That 6-0 victory against Watford, that was something else, wasn't it? Let's hope that happens.
I know it's 10 o'clock, Ian, but you need to wake up, son.
I know. I need my dinner. I mean, I just don't know. Look, we've got everybody who thinks that he's the wrong appointment is going to wait for proof that they were right, I suppose. I'll take absolutely no pleasure at all in sort of like 6 months' time in March if we are absolutely deep in the mire. Who's going to take any pleasure from that at all? We've all got to wish him well. He has got players there who are capable of performing at the very highest level. What he's got to do is make them perform as a team and make them perform over 90 minutes. We know they can perform over 45 minutes or 30 minutes because they proved it time and time again this season. But to get them to perform over 90 minutes, the same 90 minutes in the same game, that's what he's got to prove he can do. Now, he ought to be able to do that, but let's see.
Okay. There's many more comments. We haven't got time to do them all because we're already running over, but I'm going to give the last comment to Phil Walker, who says, we have to get behind Moyes, even though he wasn't the choice of many. Let's start with an open mind. Supporters Club is fantastic, by the way, and a few people have said, I don't know if you've... in fact, Ian, your ears must have been burning because we said, John and George were saying they need to meet you, and they said, let's get Ian down to the Supporters Club. So,
where's that?
That's just... Do you want to explain?
Ian. Oh, that?
No. Not the Castle Street one. Sours, it's very arty. You'll like it, Ian.
You'll fit right in there, actually.
What do you mean by that?
An art gallery. You'll be.
It is an art gallery, yeah.
Is this near where Foreman's Fish Factory is?
Yes.
Because I go there before the game quite often.
Yeah, it's a bit more down market than...
So it's sort of like round the corner, sort of on the same street as where that little sort of supermarket thing is.
Yes, Star Place, yeah.
Right, okay, well, let's do that then.
We'll do that. Anyway, only time for, I know it's international break, but let's talk about predictions. Let's assume David Moyes is in charge. We play Watford away. What's your prediction? Start with you, Ian.
2-0 victory, Noble scores a penalty, and Carroll scores a winner.
Wow. Nigel?
It's my birthday, or the day before my birthday. So I'm going to the game. I'm grateful that he's got an away game to start with, because we're better away from home than we are at home. And if he can beat Watford, he'll get the fans on his side. I think we will beat Watford, but it'll probably be like a 2-1.
And I think I will go for my famous 1-0, because as my son tells me, that something like most games finish 1-0 if you look at all the statistics. So I'm going to go for my famous 1-0 win. But there you go. We're all positive under Moyes to get his first win on his first game. I think that's about it. I have been Sean. Ian has been... Nigel has been...
Office man.
And that's it. One thing to say. Come on, you Irons!
Bobby Moore.
Come on, you Irons.
More than just a podcast. Bobby Moore. More than just a podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.